127th Psalm will be our first passage. James had mentioned about not this coming Saturday, but the one after that when Rick Duggan will be here. We'd mentioned that. I guess it was last summer. We first started trying to make plans for that, and we asked for input from some of the younger families that, to make sure they would be able to be here. And that seemed to be the best time for that. We're trying to get it at the end of the holiday stuff. We knew that wouldn't fit well with anyone's schedule. It's before all the spring stuff gets started when families are going 500 directions. And so hopefully it's in that middle section where you can take part in it, and looking forward to it. Also want to join in with James and welcome the Swans and the Calverts to the 4th Street Church. I know there'll be encouragement to us. Get to meet them. Encourage them as they're now a part of us here. 127th Psalms where we're starting. Verse 3 I want to read. 127th Psalm, verse 3. Lo, children are a heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is His reward. Wisdom from above. Psalm mentioned the blessing and the gift that children are, and we could all just spend time after time. We've all got pictures and we've all got tales about the blessings that children have brought us, and we love them more than can be described. We love them from the first time we see them. Yeah, that's one of the few relationships that can be true of. I didn't love Carla the first time I saw her. She didn't love me the first time that she saw me, nor is that true for your spouse as well. You may have been attracted the first time you saw them. You didn't love them when you first met them. You didn't know it. You didn't love them the first time you seen them. But when that child is handed to you, and the first time you hold them in your arms, you do love them. The truth is, that love actually begins before you see them. It begins during those 9 months when you're planning and preparing and trying to do everything. So you love them. Love them more than anything. It's a love that ought to motivate us to be concerned about them being godly. And what I want to ask us today is, how much do we love them? With that realm, we ought to love them, and we do love them. Here's how. We love them more than ourselves. We would make... Do you love your kids enough to sacrifice for them? Yeah. You'd go without before you let them go without. We love them enough for that. Do we love them enough to forgive them? Yeah. No matter what it is. No matter what they do. There's nothing we would not be willing to forgive them of and take them back. Why? Because we love them. I'm going to ask that question in some different realms today. Do you love them enough to sacrifice for them physically? Yeah. You love them enough to... Yeah. Do you love them enough to do... Yes. Do you love them enough to discipline them? Let's talk about this a little bit. Have you ever heard it? I know you have. The oncoming phrase now, go, I just love my children too much. I love them too much to discipline. I know you've heard that. I'm guessing that probably you may know from example. You might can call one by name who I can't discipline. I can't tell them no. I can't hold. I just love them too much. I want to challenge that today. Because that's the opposite of what God said a parent's love for their children would include. So we're going to spend some time talking about this before we move on. There's a lot going on when a child is disciplined. First of all, there is correction that's involved. Turn to Hebrews chapter 12. We're just trying to just real quickly look at the gamut of some of the things going on when discipline is being administered. One of those things is instruction. The Proverbs talks about training a child. Training infers teaching. And discipline is a part of that. It's a part of correcting wrong behavior. Look at the last part. Well, let's just read the whole thing. Look in verse 11. We'll come back to the earlier part in a moment. But Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11. No chastening for the present seems joyous but grievous. Now here we go. Here's the instruction that comes from that. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields peaceable fruit of righteousness to those that are exercised thereby. There is instruction taking place. There is teaching and correction that is taking place. And at its ground level, here's what it is, parents and grandparents and whomever we may find ourselves to be. At its ground level, here's what it's doing. When we are teaching a 3-year-old to obey parents and older and elders and those that are older than him. When we're teaching a 3-year-old to obey parents, you're laying the groundwork for a 13-year-old to obey God. When you're instructing a 7-year-old about authority, you're laying groundwork for teaching a 17-year-old to respect God's authority. And if we drop the ball on that, we have a 3-year-old or a 7-year-old or a whatever, pick your number. We teach them to never understand what submission is. We teach them to never understand what the word no means. And then we think they're going to magically submit themselves to when God tells them no. We know better than that. There is instruction in that's going on in the discipline of a child. It's laying groundwork for them to obey and submit themselves to God. But there's more going on than just instruction. Are you still with me in Hebrews 12? It included with it is some form of affliction, whatever that form may be. But there is a form of infliction incurred. Look at the inference. We talk about necessary inferences. Here's one that's necessary. Verse 11. No chastening for the present is joyous. You know what that means? It means discipline while it's happening is not fun. As a matter of fact, the Hebrew writer goes on to say it's not only doesn't seem to be joyous, it's actually grievous. It's instructive. And it's afflictive. Turn to Proverbs 22. It's a punishment for wrong. Proverbs 22. We started in the Psalms. Now let's turn to another form of the wisdom literature. Discipline it. Again, we're trying to get to the core level here. Discipline at a core level is associating pain with bad behavior. That's what it is. Now that pain can come in various forms, but it's associating pain with bad behavior. So that, again, instruction is being involved. It's instructive and it's afflictive, and what we want to happen is them to have a mindset of disobeying is not worth it. We want to instruct with the mindset of disobeying hurts too much. Proverbs 22, verse 15. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it, the foolishness, it will drive it far from him. We're trying to teach consequences. And again, at its root level, that's where we're starting at. At its root level, there are consequences to us disobeying God. And we know what those are. We're a lack of fellowship with him. Our prayers no longer heard. Ultimately, an eternity spent away from the presence of God in hell. There are consequences to disobeying God. Children are first going to understand the form of consequences in their home. The consequences of disobeying an authority figure. That has to be started when they're young. There's instruction that's taking place. There is affliction that's taking place. And it's got to be sufficient enough that, again, the concept is it's just not worth it. There's one more thing. Turn to the 13th Proverb. Turn back just a few pages. Proverb chapter 13. It's to be done in love. There's instruction going on. There is affliction going on, but there's this umbrella of love covering it all. And don't let us ever forget that. Proverbs 13, verse 24, he that spares his rod hates the son. He that loves him chastens him. He that loves him is going to teach him authority. He's going to teach him there are consequences when you violate that authority. And that idea in our culture, I love them too much. It's not close to being blasphemous. It is. Because God said the exact opposite. He that spares his rod hates his son. That's blunt. We teach our children from a young age on, don't say the word hate. Hate is not a nice word. It's what he said. Not us saying it. We read it. God said it. There is instruction going on. It's afflictive instruction to teach consequences. But it's overshadowed by love, and we better never forget that. Discipline is not because we're in a bad mood. Discipline had better not just happen on days when your nerves are frayed and everything sets you off. That better not be the case. It's always under the umbrella of love and concern for something a whole lot greater. We're laying groundwork for obedience of something a whole lot greater than what goes on in the house. We're teaching the consequences of disobedience of something a whole lot greater than just what happened on a bad day. That's the what of discipline. Now let's back off a minute. Turn to Matthew chapter 7. Just to look at a principle. Then we'll make some applications. And after seeing at the ground level what it is, it's instruction, it's affliction, but it's love. After getting that laid down as a base level, how would you like it to happen to you? We never get beyond discipline to some extent. Those of you still in the workforce, still in the work field, or to whatever degree, how would you like to be disciplined? When you've done something wrong, how would you like it? We better know the answer to that. Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. All things that you would that one should do to you, you do to them. That's the law and the prophets. We have given that a nice little phrase called the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. How would you like to be disciplined? So we've got to know the answer to that, because that's how we then need to apply it. So let me just shotgun it for just a moment. Would you like to be disciplined fairly? Can I say that for us? I think most of us would like our discipline, to whatever extent and to whatever it comes, we would like it to be fair. We would like it to be only things we are accountable for. We don't want to be disciplined at the workforce for what the guy seven tables down did. We want it to be fair. We want it to be reasonable with good judgment. Would you want it to be consistent? Well, you think that'd be a fair assessment? Would you want to be disciplined consistently, meaning that if it was okay yesterday, you're assuming that it's okay tomorrow? Could you imagine the workforce? Could you imagine where you work if you never knew what your boss wanted? You do it this way today, and then tomorrow you do the same thing and he's all over you? You wouldn't like that, would you? Of course not. Nobody would like it. Therefore, that shouldn't be how we enforce it ourselves. We're going to be consistent. The children have to know where the boundaries are. And then those boundaries can't shift based on bad hair days. It's okay or it's not. It's acceptable or it's not. They've got to know what they are, and they've got to know what it is tomorrow too. There's got to be some consistency there, or they won't know what foot to put forward. We want it to be fair. So let's be fair. We want it to be consistent. So let's be consistent. We would want it to be balanced, wouldn't you? If the boss at the work site is going to get on to you, do you also want some praise when you do it right? If he's going to tell you when you're wrong, wouldn't you like it if he told you when it was right? So let's praise them. Let's let them know when they do things well. Let them know how much you appreciate that. Let's be fair, and let's be consistent, and let's be balanced, and let's be patient. Again, with the fairness, we're holding the things only they're accountable for. So let's be patient. I'm telling you, parents, you're going to need that later on. You're going to have to make some withdrawals of that. You be patient with them. And what will happen is, when they're teenagers and that generation gap begins to kick in, they'll be patient with you back. But you've got to show it to get it. So there's a lot of underlying things. There's instruction and there's affliction based on love. We've got to do it in the right way. We've got to do it in a manner we would want it done to us. And with all that said, now let's make some applications. We start early. The longer you wait, the harder it will get. Could you imagine letting a child go rampant? No boundaries, know anything. And all of a sudden, at 15, you decide to throw the brakes on. Yeah, good luck with that. No, it starts early. It starts when, at whatever age, they are able to first understand what no means. That's when it kicks in. Because there's a lot of things that no it's going to be started with. When that's understood, there has to now be the education part. Now the instruction part comes in. Because once you have said no, parents, grandparents, once you've said no, the boundaries have been set. Remember, we're going to be fair and we're going to be consistent. The boundaries are the boundaries. But once no has been said, the boundary has been placed. And now there are consequences that have to be shown when that's broken. That's laying groundwork for later on obeying God and respecting His boundaries. Starts early. So let's be busy with that. Second application. We've read just a few verses already. We could read more. What we have read today are from the mind of God. He gets to tell us what it means to love our children. And He gets to tell us how to show that love. We don't get to tell Him that. He shows us that. And now here's the catch about parenting. And I'm sure at some point all of us did it. We all took advice from somebody. Especially that first time, that first pregnancy, you don't know up from down. All of a sudden you're reading this book and you're reading that book and you're trying to look around at other parents that you respect and you start trying to emulate. And we're all taking advice from somebody. The question is who is that going to be? Because Dr. Spock is telling us different things than what God said. And we're going to take advice from someone. Dr. Phil is going to tell you different things than what God might say. But we're taking advice from somebody. And the ladies that get together in the neighborhood, those ladies may be telling something different. And the things that... We're all taking advice from somebody. The question is, where do we put God's advice in that ranking? This is His world. Humanity itself is His creation. And He has told us some things, and we've got to be diligent about that. Who are we taking our advice from? And where are we going to rank God's commands in that advice? Third application, let's talk to the grandparents just a moment. That kind of gets overlooked sometimes. I get how a grandparent just can't bring themselves to discipline a grandchild. I get it. I can understand it. Time has softened you. Those hard edges sanded a little bit. I can understand how a grandparent just might not be able to bring themselves to do it. But grandparents, listen. Get out of the way when the parents do. Get out of their way. They are doing what God has commanded them to do. They are doing what you did when you were a parent. Now get away from that. And don't you dare interfere with them being obedient to a God-given sanction. They have a role as parents. And it's a different role than your role. But don't you get in the way while they take care of what God's asked them to do. Just bite your tongue. Get in the car and drive off if that's what you need to do. But they're doing what God asked them to do. They're trying to teach boundaries. They're trying to teach a respect for authority. They're doing what they've been commanded to. So let's remember our roles. One more application. Turn to 1 Samuel chapter 3. And this last application, I saved it for last on purpose. And that's just to emphasize the fact that what we're talking about today is very, very serious. 1 Samuel chapter 3. No, this is not just a nice filler sermon. No, this is of significance. Because the things we're talking about, if we neglect it, there are incredibly long-range consequences of that. 1 Samuel chapter 3, before we read, just want to set the context of where we are in this part of Scripture. We're at the end period, the ending period of the judges. We're at the next to the last judge. His name is Eli. And at this point, he has already somewhat taken Samuel in, almost as if he's an apprentice. Samuel has lived with Eli. He's been raising him, basically. Samuel's a prophet. And God comes to him at night and reveals some things to him about Eli and about the ending days of Eli's family. And when God tells Samuel, Samuel didn't even want to, he didn't even want to say it. They were so hard. They were so tough. Samuel didn't want to tell Eli what God said. And Eli said, listen, the words you're about to speak, I understand that they are from the Lord. Now you tell me what he told you. 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 13. Here's among what God told him that day, that night in the vision. I have told him, verse 13. Speaking of Eli, I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows of, because his sons made themselves vile and he restrained them not. You see why Samuel didn't want to go tell him that message? It's not going to be a nice night when Samuel has to go to Eli and say, God's passing judgment on your house. He's going to end the judgeship with you. Your sons will not take your place. And it's because they are evil. They're hard-hearted. And they're ungodly. And they're unruly. And it's because you, Samuel, didn't discipline them. You didn't restrain them. You didn't tell them no. When you did tell them no, you let them cross the boundaries. And you never held them accountable. They don't have any idea about consequences because they've always done what they wanted to do. God passed judgment on his house that day. What we're talking about today is serious, because he's going to pass judgment on us as well. Do you love your kids enough to sacrifice? Amen to that. You love them enough to make sure they've got everything they need in this earth? Absolutely. Do you love your kids enough to discipline them? Because that's an entirely different question, but the consequences are a whole lot longer running. How much do we love them? Do we love them enough to act like a parent? And I don't know how to... I want to describe that just a moment. Be turning to 1 Kings. You're in 1 Samuel. Just turn over a few pages to 1 Kings. We'll be there in a moment. I didn't know how to title this. The question I'm asking us is, do we love them enough to make adult decisions when adult decisions are necessary? Do you know what kind of decisions a child's going to make? They're going to make childish decisions. Remember, we're trying to be fair. And we're trying to only let them be accountable for things they are accountable for. Children are going to make childish decisions. Children are going to make very short-sighted decisions. And the smartest person in this room was the same way when they were young. And what our children need is us to love them enough to make adult decisions when that is necessary. To be the adult and to make those decisions that we as adults know, especially I'm talking to Christian adults, when we know that they are right. Again, we live in a culture that's contrary to what God's going to say. We live in a culture, and it's in my family. I've seen it with ones raising children now. Oh, I'm going to let them decide. I'm not going to force this on them. I'm going to let them decide if. If the weathermen are right, in about 3 days from now, it's going to be below freezing. If I can remember the days right, it was either Wednesday or Thursday, the high is going to be 29 if they get it right. You're going to let your child decide if they're going to go out and play without shoes? No. And we're not going to let our child decide. There are things we as the parent, we know better. We know what they don't know. And in an earthly sense about food and vegetables and proper clothing when it's cold, we're gonna stand our line. No, you can't do that. But then when it comes to spiritual things, things that impact the soul, not a foot, things that impact the soul, not their belly, we're gonna step back and say, well, I'll let them decide. We have record of that too. Sadly, 1 Kings chapter 1. We just finished a study not very long ago on the United Kingdom. David's one of my favorite Old Testament characters. I love him. And he's so many good things we can learn about him. But there are some bad decisions he made, and we know what they are. Much of those bad decisions started with his adultery with Bathsheba, when he just kind of, from then on with his family, it's like he just would not take a stand. And his children got the blunt of that. In 1 Kings chapter 5, we're introduced to one of his children named Adonijah. And to set the stage for us, for those who went through that United Kingdom period, this is when Solomon has already been anointed by God. This is not David picking favorites. God decided Solomon would be the king to take David's place. Adonijah's older than that. He's older than Solomon, and he doesn't like that. I'm the oldest son remaining. I'm supposed to take the throne. Verse 5, Adonijah, the son of Haggith, that would have been the mother, he exalted himself and said, I will be king. Now, just before we go any farther, God exalted Solomon. God said Solomon will be king. Adonijah exalted himself and said, I will be king. He prepared him chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. He's got his own little personal entourage leading the way, setting the stage for his upcoming pronouncement. How in the world would David's son be so blatantly disrespectful to God, be so disrespectful to David and David's wishes, so disrespectful to his brother? Verse 6, his father, and it pains us to have to say that's David that's being referred to there. His father, David, had never displeased him at any time, saying, why have you done this? The newer translations don't use the word displeased. It uses the word corrected. That is just mouth dropping. That is just, as much as we love David, David had a son that not one time in his life was ever told by the daddy, that is wrong. What are you thinking? I can't allow that. He never displeased him, never corrected him, never did anything that would disappoint what Adonijah wanted for himself. And what do we get? We get a boy who is now raised to be a man. But while he was a child, never learned no. Never learned that there are consequences for crossing boundaries. Never learned to respect David's authority. And by contrast, now he doesn't respect God's authority. And he is in open rebellion against God's king. That's how serious it is when we decide, well, I'll let them make their own decisions. No, they're going to make childish decisions. And when they're in our home, we as the adult who know more, we know what they don't know. We know what they are wanting to do can lead to something else. And we better love them enough to stand up and be the adult. Here's the catch on it. God's people have been called to be different. We get that. And that is not easy. It never gets easy. But it's really, really tough when they're kids. It's really, really tough when they're teenagers, when they stand out in the halls. And there are things going on after school, and there are things going on after the ball games, and they're not a part of it. And they're looked funny, and they're made fun of, and they're asked why, and that's tough on a kid. And don't belittle that. If you have forgotten that, let me just suggest you have forgotten it, because it happened to you too. It's tough to not fit in. But that's what God is asking His people to do. So we've got to, again, we're training and we are educating our children to be able to do that, because they're going to want to fit in, just like me and you want to fit in. It's easier to fit in. But there are things we as Christian adults, as parents, know can't happen. To say that the young ones don't know all the answers is saying too much. They don't even know all the questions. They don't know what they don't know. But you've been through it. You do know. Now, are we going to stand up and be the parent with what we know things can lead to? Now, just to make sure we don't miss any points, let's just take a break and let's make some applications. As your children grow, as they get more involved in things, they will get more involved in things. They're going to get involved in sports. They're going to get involved in social clubs at school. They're going to get involved in things. And those things, just a matter of time, are going to be scheduled and planned at the same time worship services are scheduled and planned. You're going to love them enough to stand up and be an adult. You're going to love them enough to not do what David did and just say, well, honey, you make your own choices. Or will you say, God is first in our family? And you're going to have to miss that practice. And by the way, what do you think an 8-year-old would choose between going to baseball practice or a Bible study? He's 8 years old. You know what he's going to choose. You know what they don't know. You going to stand up? I mentioned sports. Put band there. Put scouting there. Put whatever in the world you want to put there. What choice are you going to make as a parent? You love them enough to make a choice on that. What about with worshiping while on vacation? What do you think a 6-year-old is going to choose between going to a worship service on vacation or getting to spend more time around the mouse? More time around the orca? What do you think they're going to choose? They're 6 years old. You know what they're going to choose. They're going to choose what every one of us that were 6 years old would choose. But we know what they don't know. And by the way, I mentioned a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old, and you can pull the plug over them for a while. You can cover their eyes with the curtain. We can make the statements, God is first in our life. God is first in our family. But when the 6-year-old is a 16-year-old, and you've always let them go to practice over worship, you let them go to the game over worship, you didn't worship while on vacation or traveling, or they will see through that when they're a teen. They'll know if it's lip service or if it's real. They'll know if God really is first. Do we love them enough to make a choice like that? Do we love them enough to deal with modesty issues? I get that a 2-year-old, still wearing a diaper, dressed in a cheerleader outfit of your favorite college team, I get how cute that is. I understand how sweet that is. They're 2 years old. What about when they're 16 wearing that same outfit? Is that still cute? Is that still sweet? No, what that is immodest. And when you put your little 4-year-old son in a Speedo for a back... 4 years old. What about when he's 15? Is that cute? Or is it disgustingly immodest? You know what they don't know. I doubt there are very few little girls who are, when they're 4, 5, 6, 7, who don't have dreams. Oh, I want to be a cheerleader. They see it and they want to be a part of that. When you're 4 and 5, that's awful sweet, isn't it? But you know what they don't know. You know what it leads to. You know what the future holds for that. You love them enough to take a stand, parents? What about the school dances? I mentioned in the introduction just a moment ago, it's hard to not fit in. And when everybody walking those halls is going and it's the highlight of school, it's hard to not fit in. It's hard to not want to be a part of that. You know what they don't know. Some maybe even from experience, knowing what they don't know. And it's just kind of strange that we can read passages where Paul writes to Timothy, flee fornication. And then we can encourage our kids to go to a place where the lights are going to be low and the music's going to be slow and you're going to be 1 inch away from a person of the opposite sex and you're moving to the music. We're going to read to them, flee fornication, and then encourage them to do something that puts them 2 seconds away. We know what they don't know. Are we going to take a stand Are we going to love them enough to say, that can't happen? You can't do this with my permission. And then tell them why. Discipline is instruction. That's where it starts, right? Here's what's wrong with it. Here's what's wrong with going to a baseball practice instead of worshiping God. Here's what's wrong with skipping out on worship because we're on vacation. Here's what's wrong with wearing certain things. Here's what's wrong with going certain places. It's instructive. Are we doing that? Do we love them enough to do that? And again, I'll ask the question, all those examples I gave you, what do you think a child's going to choose? You know what they don't know. And we're trying to get them, as Paul said about it in a different context, obviously, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. We're trying to train and teach. Do we love them enough to do it? Turn to 3 John. We'll look at one last verse. It's not easy being a parent. And nobody gets it all right. And I don't want you to think that I'm trying to say that I got it all right. We've made a lot of mistakes. There's nothing easy about raising children to be godly. But the answers are findable. It's not easy, but it is possible because God's given us boundaries. And God's given us an avenue to make it possible. And that ought to be the primary goal of every parent and grandparent here. In 3 John, I understand. John is speaking from a spiritual standpoint. He was a teacher, a preacher, who through his teaching converted people. And now he's referring to them as his children. Children in the spiritual sense. They are Christians because of the relationship that we had together. I understand that's where it's coming from. I want us to read it from the physical standpoint. Verse 4. John said, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Amen to that. I know he's talking about Christians who have stayed faithful because, and it's through influence that he had and through teaching that he had. They are still faithful. And John said, I taught that guy 20 years ago. He's still faithful. I baptized him 15 years ago. Still faithful. No greater joy do I have, John says. Now let's twist that and put it into a physical standpoint. And how wonderful it would be to those parents that are here who are now in the process of what we're talking about. Training children. No greater joy than to hear that they walk in truth. That's what it's about. Discipline is about instruction. And we know what they don't know, so instruct them about what this activity and this place, instruct them about what the future holds for that. Because we want to be able to say that they walk in truth. Get your songbooks out. First question I asked today was, how much do we love our children? I want to make a play on that. How much does God love us? Us as His children. I asked several times, do you love them enough to? And then we jumped off on that. Does God love us enough? Loved us enough to take us back when we were rebellious and hard-hearted and stubborn and prideful. And the only way that could be possible was if blood was shed. But the blood of bulls and goats wasn't good enough. That would never cut it. So He loves us not just enough to take us back. He loves us enough to watch His own Son die so that He could take us back. Does God love us? Does He love us enough? Yeah. Now what are we going to do with that? You never become a Christian. He loved you enough to offer His Son. Best thing heaven had. Don't let that be for naught. You believe Jesus is who He said He was. You believe it by faith. Then repent of your sins. Confess Him. Be baptized and wash away those sins. If you are a Christian, and we just need to maybe bend some of these applications a little bit. Maybe we've crossed our boundaries. Maybe we need to look at ourselves as the one who has not taken discipline very well. God's chastised us and He's disciplined us and we bucked against that. Come back to Him. He's made things possible, but we got to repent. Do it while we stand and sing.